O wonder, how many goodly creatures are there here? How beauteous mankind is. O brave new world that has such people in it. That quote probably sends a shiver down your spine if you've read Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, because you know instantly that this world, well, it isn't brave in the way you might think. It's this chillingly stable, genetically engineered society obsessed with pleasure. And you shared some fantastic sources with us that show this title. It's not just some catchy, ironic sci-fi label. No, it's packed with meaning, a deep literary reference that basically tells us exactly what Huxley was up to. So our mission today, let's really dive deep into that irony. We want to unpack why this title is maybe one of the most savage literary jokes ever written. Mm-hmm. And it all kicks off with Shakespeare, that line. It's from The Tempest, of course. Okay. Let's get into it.
Right. And to really get Huxley, you have to understand the original context in Shakespeare. It's just dripping with irony already. The line's spoken by Miranda. And she's defined by being completely isolated her whole life. Just her father, Prospero, and two spirits, Caliban and Ariel, on this island. That's it.
Right. Total isolation.
Yeah.
So when a ship finally crashes and all these men wash ashore, it's the first time she's seen other humans, really. And she's just instantly blown away. Sees these guys, you know, humanity outside her bubble, and calls them goodly creatures.
Exactly. That pure sort of unfiltered awe, that's what Huxley grabs onto, because Miranda's reaction, it comes from this profound ignorance, right? Ignorance of human nature, of history. I mean, the men she's looking at, they're not exactly knights in shining armor. They're described in the source as usurpers and would-be king killers.
Wow. So she's basically marveling at the beauty of the very people who tried to have her and her father killed when she was a baby.
Precisely. It's quite something.
Is it just pure naivete, though? Or is there maybe something deeper Huxley is setting up? Like this idea that when we encounter something totally new, like a civilization or a technology, we just project all our best hopes onto it, regardless of the, you know, messy reality.
That projection. Yes, that's absolutely key to the irony. One source calls her reaction jejune, if not totally naive. Think about who's likely there. You've got maybe Trinculo and Stefano, basically dirty, drunken sailors plotting murder. And she sees them as these paragons.
So the brave new world she sees is just an illusion, built entirely on her not knowing anything else.
Completely. And we can't ignore something else. The sources highlight the sexual undertone.
Ah, right. Because she's seeing for the very first time a whole bunch of potential partners, eligible men.
Exactly. So her excitement isn't just this philosophical, oh, mankind thing. There's a definite biological sexual charge under the surface. It's innocence meeting. Well, opportunity.
Okay. So even in Shakespeare, the quote is already about this massive clash. Idealized hope versus ugly reality.
That's the collision. And it makes the quote just perfect for Huxley to repurpose for any vision of social or technological progress.
Right. So here's where it gets really interesting. How does Huxley take this super ironic kind of sexually charged line and drop it into his world state? He gives it to John the Savage, raised outside this civilized world on a reservation, but he's obsessed with Shakespeare. He's read it all.
Yeah, John's our new Miranda, in a way. He's initially totally excited about visiting this shiny, orderly world state. He sees the technology, the cleanliness, and boom, out comes Miranda's line. He's the outsider, hoping this world is somehow better than the, frankly, difficult and sometimes violent life he knew.
And the irony layered onto John.
It's
fascinating. Especially thinking about that sexual subtext from Miranda, because John is like fundamentally, adamantly anti-sex.
Yeah, well, absolutely. He feels intense guilt and shame about any sexual thoughts. He literally whips himself over it.
So he's looking at this new world, quoting Miranda.
Right. But probably, consciously at least, ignoring the sexual aspect of these goodly creatures. Because for him, sex is base, dirty, part of the uncivilized world he wants to escape. But, and this is crucial, the sources point out he's already completely smitten with Lenina the first time he says the quote.
Ah, so even if he's consciously rejecting it, he's still unconsciously echoing Miranda's excitement. That attraction is there, bubbling under.
It suggests that even John, this outsider clinging to Shakespeare for his humanity, he can escape basic biology. Biology that Huxley's world state has just managed, channeled, neutralized.
He hates the society's promiscuity, but he still feels the pull.
And that struggle, that guilt he feels, that's exactly what the world state is designed to eliminate entirely. No struggle, no guilt, just satisfaction.
But the real genius here, as you mentioned, is the repetition. He doesn't just say it once.
No, he says it multiple times. And each time it lands differently, it gets hollower, more painful.
It's like Huxley uses the repetition to track John's journey from that initial wide-eyed wonder to just utter disillusionment.
Exactly, the meaning shifts. Brave New World stops being about daring or wonder and starts sounding like Miranda's naive, foolish hope in the face of something awful.
Okay, so connecting this repetition to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
The consensus seems to be that Huxley meant the title as pure irony. Like a tongue-in-cheek dig, as one source puts it.
That's the dominant reading, yes. An intellectual slap, basically. A parody.
And aimed squarely at those popular utopian ideas floating around in the early 20th century. The technocratic ones.
Precisely. People like H.G. Wells. You know, his works like A Modern Utopia. The idea that you could engineer society perfectly, solve all problems with science and management, get rid of all the messiness.
And Huxley saying, be careful what you wish for. Because getting rid of the messiness might mean getting rid of humanity itself.
That's the core conflict, isn't it? Stability versus, well, existential freedom. Huxley shows that the things we often think make life meaningful, deep love, purpose, God, art, they all seem to require, or at least involve, a willingness to experience unhappiness.
Awesome.
Well, think about it. Real human experiences, the stuff that fuels great art or deep philosophical thought, it's often messy. It involves shame, guilt, heartbreak, anxiety, yearning.
Right, difficult emotions.
Those emotions give life depth, meaning, but they are completely, fundamentally incompatible with the world state's goal.
Which is smooth sailing.
Yeah.
Maximum pleasure, minimum pain, stability above all else.
Exactly. So they sacrificed everything difficult, not just physical pain, but emotional turmoil, philosophical struggle, artistic angst, because all that stuff is seen as not in line with political and social stability.
It creates instability. People asking difficult questions, wanting more than just comfort.
Yes. Right. So the society is designed to keep everyone docile, easily managed, gently rocked to sleep to the lullaby of pleasure, as one source nicely puts it.
And their drug, Soma, is the key tool for that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Instant happiness, no side effects, no hangover, just oblivion from anything unpleasant.
The perfect pacifier. Which makes John's confrontation with the world controller, Mustafa Mond, so incredibly powerful.
That's where it makes his stand.
Yes. He basically argues that losing all that pain, all that struggle, it's too high a price. He demands the freedom to be unhappy. He says, I claim the right to be unhappy.
Wow. To claim it? As a right?
It's profound. And his eventual suicide. Well, it's often read as symbolizing the death of what we traditionally think of as human when faced with this kind of relentless, comfortable progress.
So in this reading, the world state looks good only if you're completely clueless, like Miranda looking at those shipwrecked sailors.
Pretty much. The moment John sees the truth behind the shiny surface, sees what they traded away for comfort, he can't live with it. He can't survive in that world.
Okay, that cynical reading feels very compelling, very complete. But you mentioned that some analysis finds something else, an undertone of optimism, often overlooked.
Mm.
Is it possible it's not just satire and resignation?
Well, this alternative view asks us to look back again at The Tempest, at Prospero's ending.
Right. What happens with him?
He doesn't just stay bitter or retreat. He gets his power back, his title, and he chooses to go back to the real world, Milan, and he actively tries to make it better. He forgives his enemies, even Antonio, who betrayed him so badly. He accepts his own limits, his mortality, by giving up his magic. He chooses engagement.
Okay. That is a huge contrast with John. John rejects the brave new world entirely, retreats, and ultimately destroys himself.
While Prospero chooses to embrace the world, flaws and all, and work within it.
So this alternative reading suggests, what? That Huxley isn't just saying run away from the future.
It suggests he might be pushing us to nevertheless embrace the future we're heading into, but to do it wisely, to actively set out to improve it like Prospero did. Maybe the message isn't just a warning, but also a call to engage responsibility, to use our own magic, our technology, our knowledge with empathy and wisdom, not just for control and stability.
That really complicates things, doesn't it? Puts the responsibility back on us, the reader.
It highlights the deep moral ambiguity of the novel. Because Huxley deliberately created a world that has solved huge problems. War, poverty, disease are gone. Objectively, it's stable.
But the cost?
The cost is immense. It really drives home that phrase, one man's utopia might be another man's hell. There's no easy answer.
So, wrapping our heads around this,
mm-hmm.
What does it all mean? The brave new world isn't brave like heroic.
Mm-hmm.
It's brave like naive. Seen through the eyes of Miranda, or initially John, with this total innocence and misplaced enthusiasm, that initial wonder completely masks the crushing reality underneath the repression, the lack of freedom, the sacrifice of everything deep and meaningful for the sake of ultimate stability.
Yeah. Huxley uses that beautiful, hopeful Shakespearean line to deliver this absolutely savage punchline about mistaking comfort and technological ease for actual human progress or virtue.
It's a powerful warning.
It is, and it leaves us with a pretty challenging question today, doesn't it? Given these two ways of looking at the title Huxley warning us off versus this idea of needing to actively engage and improve the future we're inevitably disembarking into. Well, what parts of our own modern drive to maximize pleasure and minimize friction are we maybe ignoring? Think about it. We're constantly surrounded by distractions, algorithmic comforts, digital soma designed to smooth over every bump. What essential parts of our own humanity might require us to push back against that, to maybe even consciously claim the right to be unhappy, as John put it, just to hold on to our freedom, our depth? Are we right now maybe optimizing the soul right out of our own lives, all in the name of stability and comfort? It's definitely something to think about.